Steamboat. The call rang out across the estuary, and fishermen in every small punt within earshot jerked their heads around. Our small open wooden punts were ranged across the river on an afternoon flood tide. Overhead, the sun beat down on a wonderful July afternoon ashore. But a southwesterly wind meant that a jumper and oilskins were essential kit on the water. Downriver, the estuary widened, creating the shorelines of Waterford and Wexford, which guided the three sister rivers of the Barrow Northern Shore to the sea. The sisters met at Cheek Point, and it was also the junction for the ports of Waterford and New Ross, a busy shipping area that presented additional challenges for fishermen. Now, a huge ship was surging up the estuary, the bow opening up on Buttermilk Castle on the Wexford shore. The speed was apparent in the progress she made, and soon the entire length of the ship was obvious as the white superstructure astern appeared, where a pilot advised her captain on the channel. "Steamboat!" A more theatrical cry further up the estuary, and within moments, every punt from Moran's Poles, Mount Key, Cheek Point, and the Rookery were on alert. Some took little notice, secure in the knowledge that because of where their nets were currently drifting, they were outside the ship's reach. Others were more problematic. These were just off the main channel and could, with some degree of certainty, leave the nets as they were. But perhaps they might lower the outboard engine and steam out to stand by the outer end, better to mark their position. Several, however, were like us, drifting across the channel and needing to haul the nets aboard. The drift was gone, and they were cursing their luck. Paul Duffin and myself were in our early 20s, but already seasoned salmon fishermen. Our tar-hulled punt with green topworks and a white-painted band had caught its fair share of salmon that summer, using the light green nylon drift nets that hung in a curtained line in the water, attempting to snare the king of all fish. Earlier, we had come across on the flood tide from the village, our punt jostling with the others on the Shelbourne banks on the Wexford shore. As the black suede of mud was covered by the incoming tide, it was followed by noisy seed birds who hungrily hunted across it on webbed feet for shellfish. Eventually, we got an opportunity to set our nets in towards the bank, and then with strokes on the oars, we drifted apace, constantly watching for signs of our prey. Later, we would haul the nets aboard, having drifted to Great Island Power Station, and then steam back down against the tide to try reset once more. With few options, we opted to set half and half. Half the nets in the tide, half on the shallow waters of the now covered mud. A good drift, but the risk was that as the nets drifted away into the tide, a ship would come. "Steamboat!" Paul took the cork rope, I took the lead rope, and tensing our muscles, we started to haul, hand over hand. It was an odd phrase when you thought about it in this age of oil-fueled vessels. The first regular coal-burning steamboat in these waters was in 1826, when the Nora Crenna spurned reliance on sail and wind, bringing a greater degree of regularity between Waterford and our ancient trading link of Bristol. Nearly 150 years later, in 1962, the last steamer coasting vessel crossed between Waterford and Liverpool, Clyde Shipping's Rockabilly. Although in 1985, one steamer remained in the harbour, she was no danger to fishermen, for she was a slow-moving dredger called the Port Lauriga, which clung tenaciously to coal and steam. Her skipper was Michael Heffernan, originally from Cheek Point, and Michael and his crew would no more come near a drift net than we would go near a water bailiff. No, the shout that warned of ships was just a tradition, and the fishermen of Waterford Harbour were nothing if not soaked in traditions. Paul and I had most of the nets aboard when a shiny blue container ship owned by the Waterford-based Bell Lines Company passed us by. Many of the crew were men from around the harbour, and if they had their way, they would try and avoid us too. But The master was on a time schedule, and nothing could be allowed to slow his journey. Our drift was done, and still with empty nets aboard, we faced a decision. Fish don't ring bells, they say, and maybe the next drift might reward us. But closer to high tide meant more risk of ships. And we dreaded hearing that cry again that day. Steamboat!